Eve like me? I resist the urge to laugh hysterically. I'm hanging on by a thread myself. I sigh and eye her pod, and then start to climb in beside her.
What are you doing?
She asks, startled. Seeing if this works, I tell Mari. If I can hide away from all of this for a few hours, I'm going to join you. She gives a husky little laugh as I squeeze in next to her.
I have to warn you. It doesn't. The hiding only helps a little.
Ah, but it does help, right? I lie down beside her, our shoulders pushing into one another, and I squeeze her hand. I know how she feels. The only reason I haven't broken down sobbing myself is because one more crying person isn't going to help things. Others need someone strong to look to, so I might as well be that person. I give her hand another squeeze. It's going to be okay. I promise.
Are you just saying that?
She sounds teary again.
Yes?
I get a laugh out of her, at least. It's something. That night, as all the humans are piled into our fur beds in one of the storage rooms in the ship, the gentle rocking motion makes it easy to fall asleep. The glowing eyes of my neighbors, not so much. I drift off anyhow, and I'm not surprised when Mari comes and curls up next to me. She's decided that I'm her protector somehow, so I put a motherly arm around her, pat her back, and try to go back to sleep. As I do, I hear the nighttime crying again. I think it's Hannah. I guess we all deal with things differently. She's a daytime bitch and broken by dark. It happens. I wish I could help, but I don't think she wants anyone to know her weakness. So I close my eyes and try to sleep through it. Things will get better, I tell her silently. This is only the beginning. When you hit rock bottom, there's nowhere to go but up. Of course, I'm not sure if I'm telling her that, or trying to convince myself. 3. Lauren. I stare out at the waters of the ocean, numb with shock. There's lots about this world that's different, of course, but there's also so much that's the same. Snow is snow, mountains are mountains, rocks are rocks. And back where we were, the landscape was nothing but snow and rocks covered by snow. It didn't look so foreign. At least, not to my eyes. But this beach? This is alien. This is otherworldly. This is downright creepy. The ship made it between the valleys of the jagged mountains surrounding us and has come out to the water's edge. The long ramp extends out into the sand. But the ship itself is already in the water itself, resting on a tripod of legs that look like they should be sturdier than they are to withstand the slamming of the weird-ass ocean. And boy, is the ocean weird. The water's green. Not a comforting seafoam green or even blue-green. It's a deep bottle green, and the froth that curls along each wave is green as well. The sand is a darker, almost jade color, and the grit is thicker than I seem to recall it being on Earth. It smells like ocean, at least, even if it doesn't look like it. The waves are chaotic, too. I recall summer vacations spent at the Florida beaches when I was a teenager, and being disappointed that the waves were so tepid that you couldn't ride them like surfers did on television. They were gentle, refreshing little waves. Not here. These monstrous waves were chaotic and angry. They crash and slam onto the beach as if trying to punish it. I know that has something to do with the pull of two moons instead of just one, but it's alarming to see. And the creatures. God, there are creatures everywhere. The crabs look more like scorpions, and the waves undulate with tentacled serpentine things. And lucky me, my vision has corrected itself enough that I can see them in all their glory. This is not a friendly place. Somehow when I heard we'd be taking the ship to the ocean, I thought of white sandy beaches and rolling gentle waves. Even if it's snowy, it'd still be lovely and comforting to look at. Yeah, not so much. But there are birds. Brown, fat little birds cluster along the cliffs and fly away in waves the moment anyone approaches. Bigger white-feathered birds with long spindly legs dip needle-like bills into the waves and fish out treats. It's not quite like home, but seeing the birds somehow makes me feel better. Watching them always calms me. It's interesting how creatures here are similar to the ones at home, but still wildly different. The bird in the waves looks like a strung-out pale cousin to a flamingo, but its beak looks more like a razor blade. The crabs here are similar, but creepier. The ocean is water, but not quite the same as ours. The people here, same thing.
Well, this is different.
Willa moves to my side, gazing out at the water. She hugs her fur wraps closer to her chest as the strange bird in the waves wanders away from us. She absently kicks a tiny crab scorpion away from her boot.
I don't recall the beach looking so very spidery.
Me either. I watch as one of the plate-sized spider-like crabs scuttles nearer to the water. Something with tentacles reaches out and snags it, dragging it into the waves, and I shudder.
Good thing it's too cold to swim, huh? Good thing,
she echoes, agreeing, then glances over at me.
Mardok says he wants help salvaging some of the equipment, if you've got time.
Mardok is one of the big blue aliens with tattoos and silver horns. He looks very different from the others, and I think someone mentioned that he was part of the crew on the ship a long time ago. There are so many layers and backstories that a newcomer like me is doing good just to keep names and faces straight, so I try to focus on that sort of thing. I do know that he knows a lot about the ship, and I know he and Harlow have been working hard to strip components and small bits here and there before the entire thing goes up in a blaze of glory at the beach. Seeing as how we're now at the beach, I guess it's close to fireball time. Sure, I can help. I don't know if I'll have any idea of what I'm looking at, though. I'm not up on my spaceship knowledge.
Me either. I think he just wants extra hands. The other big blue guys are off hunting or setting up tents or caves or something.
Willa makes a face.
God, I hope it's not tents because I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep on the ground knowing those spider scorpion things are around.
Great. Now I'm not going to be able to sleep. I tease as we turn back toward the ship. I can't resist one last look back at the waves, and I see the white bird dip its head under the water and pull out something slimy. It glances over in my direction and pauses, and I feel an absurd urge to wave to it, like it's giving me permission to live on its planet. Stupid of me. It's just a bird at the end of the day. I'm stuck here whether he wants me to be or not. But I'm smiling as I follow Willa back to the ship anyway. Inside, it's surprisingly quiet. For the last few days, there's been people on top of people. Mardox told us that the ship normally has just a 4-man crew, and I believe it. While it seems large from the outside, the interior living quarters are actually kind of cramped. You can't pass shoulder to shoulder down a hall with one of the big aliens inside, not without someone having to scuttle out of the way. Today, though, most of the tribe is outside on the beach or away hunting, and the place feels surprisingly empty. Mardok is in the cargo bay, his back to us. He stands off to one side by the lid of one of the coffin-like pods we woke from. He's got a shining tool in his hand that reminds me of a screwdriver and is using it to pry one of the circuit boards apart. "I brought an extra pair of hands," Willa announces. Marisol peeps over the edge of one of the coffins and smiles at me, then ducks back to work. I grin at her and then look over at Mardok. "Hi," I say with a timid wave when the big alien glances at me. I always think Mardok is one of the most intimidating of the aliens. He's one of the tallest, and his horns are covered with gleaming metal. One side of his body is heavily tattooed, and I heard a rumor that he's part cyborg, though I can't tell what part. That makes him a little scary. Then again, Rook is also scary, and Vectol. And, okay, most of them, even if they're doing their best to seem nice. It's just taking me some time to get used to things.
"Good. Another pair of hands. I need all I can get, because Vectol wants to get this ship launched and underwater by the end of the day today. That means I've got to get everything powered down and taken apart in the next few hours. And time's wasting."
I roll up the sleeves of my long tunic. "Show me what to do." Willa claps her hands. "I'll go grab lunch and then come back and help." She dashes off, and as she does, I lean in and watch Mardok pry a tiny golden three-pronged chip from one of the panels.
"I need as many of these as you can find. If you pry up this layer of circuitry, you'll see that there are four on this level, and three on the next. With 20 of these parts, that should give us 140 of them. Think you can do that for me?"
"I think so," I tell him, and take the tool he hands me. He walks away, and I'm left on my own to get started. Oh. Okay. That's all the training I get. Well, all right. I size up the room and decide to start by the far wall. One of the coffins is pushed up against the side of the ship, and the panel I need is, naturally, on the part I can't get to from the accessible side. I try to push the coffin away from the wall, but it weighs more than I do, and if there were rollers on it, they've been stripped down or turned off. At any rate, it's not budging. All right, then. I climb atop the coffin and slide down the opposite side, my butt wedged against the wall, against a bar, and what looks like a closed window. I bend over and start to pry the compartment open.
"Wait. Loden. Don't."
I glance up. Is he talking to me?
"Lauren."
Marisol corrects quietly.
"Her name is Lauren."
"Sorry. It's a lot to remember,"
he says, racing over to my side. "How do you think we feel?" I blurt out. Mardok laughs and shakes his head.
"Sorry. I'm sure it's worse for you guys. You're fine. It's just don't lean against that wall. I've stripped the escape hatch mechanism."
He pats the bar my butt was resting against.
"If you push down on this, the entire panel could open up and dump you into the water below."
Eek. I guess that closed window wasn't a window but a hatch. It's almost like this alien technology is dangerous, I say dryly. He laughs, surprised and pleased at my attitude.
"Almost."
I've pried 120 chips out of the coffins when Farley heads into the cargo bay breathless. Her gaze is focused on her mate.
"Have you seen Will-a-la?"
I glance up and watch as Mardok wipes sweat from his brow and puts aside the equipment he's working on.
What do you mean?
He glances back at me. Was I the last one to see her? She was bringing lunch, wasn't she? I haven't seen her since I came in. I look over to find Marisol, but she's gone. Well, shit. Farley makes an alarmed noise.
Gren is missing, too. The others think he might have taken her.
I feel sick at the thought. I know Will has been trying to befriend him. This is what happens when you try to be nice. That doesn't explain where Marisol went, though.
You have to help us look, Farley tells Mardok. We need you.
Mardok hesitates, clearly torn. I know he wants to finish salvaging the ship. Vektal's already been in several times while we've been working to tell him to hurry along. Now that we're on the shore, he doesn't want to wait any longer to ditch the ship. Every moment it's here is another moment he clearly feels its presence is threatening the tribe. Maybe he's not wrong. I do know Mardok's been stripping and crushing several components as he works. Maybe a fiery inferno is the best solution for this ship. But if that's the case, I need to find Marisol. Mardok glances back at me and I wave him on, doing my best to look like the industrious little human I am. I'm just going to finish these. I lie. You go ahead. I'll catch up with the others when I'm done. It's only a half lie. I am going to finish up, but I'm going to do my best to find Marisol first. People are more important than parts. And if the Sakui are super fired up to get rid of the ship, then I need to find her. Pronto. They turn and race out of the cargo hold, and I immediately put down my tool and the bag of chips I've been working on, and head down the hallway. Marisol, I call out. Are you in here? I know it's futile to call her name out, she never answers. But I can't help but try. Marisol! I try each time I enter a new room. In the last 2 days, the ship's been looking more and more ravaged. Pieces have been torn out of the walls, components stripped from their circuit boards, and wires dangle from the ceiling in more than one room. The lighting and motion-sensitive doors no longer seem to work, either, and I have to slide my way into the hall that leads to the bridge. There's a big metal bar in front of the door, just about forehead height, and I nearly bang my head on it as I enter. Must have fallen when Harlow and Mardok were stripping parts. I try to shove it out of the way, and when it doesn't budge, I duck and slide my way into the bridge, squeezing past the now-broken door. Hello? Are you in here, Marisol? She's not there, either, but I am a little surprised to see stacks of strange-looking parts set in most of the chairs and on every surface. I have no idea what these are, but when I look closer, I see a warning symbol of some kind. And something that looks like squiggles of fire. Fuck. I know what those are. These are explosive parts salvaged from the ship. They must be stacking them here at the front to ensure that when the ship's set on fire, it explodes and the bridge isn't usable by anyone thinking to salvage her. My skin prickles with awareness. It's definitely not safe here. Marisol! No answer. I kneel down at one of the stations and hold on to the counter, peering underneath. It looks like a good hiding spot.
Activating distress beacon.
The computer calls out in a garbled voice. What? I jerk to my feet and stare in horror down at the panel. The spot where I put my hand is lit up, covered in lots of squiggly-looking keys that I probably hit somehow. I don't know what I did to make it light up, but I know I can't duplicate it. Holy hell! What have I done? This is exactly what the others didn't want to happen. Cancel distress beacon, I call out. When that elicits no response, I try again. Hello? Cancel distress beacon. Seriously, what the fuck? Why did no one cover up this panel if it was so damn important? I smack it with my hand.
Activating distress beacon.
The computer calls out again in that calm, eerie voice. It sounds like it's slowed down, as if the computer itself is slowly dying. I don't know if it's repeating itself or if I've somehow now sent out two distress beacons. I whimper in frustration. I have to let someone know about this. I have to tell them that we need to stop this thing before it's too late. Mardok will know what to do. I turn and race for the door. Bang! The bar I forgot about in my haste. It knocks me on my forehead, and I realize I should have ducked about 2 seconds before the world goes dark. 4. Lauren. Bang! A muffled vibration shakes my body, jerking me awake. My head throbs and I try to sit bolt upright, only to smack my head on something hard again. Oh, I fall back again.
Don't sit up,
Marisol whispers at my side in the dark.
No room.
I squint, trying to make out where I am. Still on the bridge? No, it's really dark and cramped. I can feel the heat of Marisol's body as she presses her arm against mine. It feels claustrophobic.
Where are we?
In one of the coffin pods.
She winces as there's another loud bang and our pod shakes and shivers like it's on a roller coaster.
Bad news. The ship's on fire.
What? I stare at her wide-eyed. Already? They didn't wait for us?
Well.
She bites her lip and looks miserable.
I was having a bad day, and I wanted to go back to hiding, just for a bit. But you looked uncomfortable where you were, so I moved you, and...
She winces.
I threw my tool.
Your tool? My head's ringing, and I'm having a hard time following what she's talking about.
It's a weapon,
she whispers,
just in case.
I pat her arm because I know what that just-in-case is. Just in case aliens come back and try to take us captive again. Gotcha.
And, like, I think I hit something important because a bunch of stuff caught on fire.
I think of all the flammable stuff in the cockpit. Yeah, I can see that happening. Bad luck, I murmur. She clenches my arm, worried.
And you wouldn't wake up. I didn't know what to do, so I brought you here.
And here is... My vision is still fuzzy, and I rub my eyes, wishing I had my glasses. My vision gets better by the day, but it's not perfect.
Inside one of the pods?
Mari whispers.
I think we're sinking now.
Of course we are. I murmur because that's my luck. I've survived a kidnapping by aliens and being stranded on a wintry planet, only to go down with the ship. Seems about right. Do the others know we're here?
I don't know. I haven't seen anyone.
Between the distress beacon and Willa disappearing, I can kind of see that. It's been a hectic day and I'm not supposed to be on here. I'm supposed to be catching up with the others once I finish my task. Someone will figure out eventually that I'm not there, but by then it will be too late. I press my hand against the lid of the coffin. How did you get me in here? I rub my bruised, aching forehead. All I remember is, yes, the bar. God, so stupid of me.
Dragged you.
Marisol's voice is ultra-quiet, as if she thinks someone will overhear us.
What do we do now?
She asks, worried. I have no idea. But I'm the one that always has a plan, so I need to think of something. I rack my brain trying to think of how we can get out of this. If the ship's on fire, it's not like we can jump out. I think of all the explosives at the far end of the ship on the bridge. Maybe those are what's making the pounding noise that slams into our little coffin and makes the entire thing and my insides shiver. I inhale, but there's no scent of smoke, just Marisol's slightly sweaty smell and her frightened body pressing against mine. For a moment, my head throbs, and it feels so tight and cramped in here that I want to kick my way out. It's too small, too dark, too little room to breathe. I close my eyes and take a deep breath, trying to calm myself. Okay, okay. Being in this coffin is a good thing. We're not going to burn to death. That's a bonus. But we've got to get out of here. I don't know how long we can stay at the bottom of the ocean in this thing, but my guess is not that long. The air won't last, and we've stripped so many parts from the pod itself that I'm surprised that even the lid is staying on. One thing at a time, though. I touch the lid again, and it feels cool. Either we're well insulated, or there's no fire in the cargo bay. I don't know which it is, though. I'll have to risk it at some point, of course, but for now, I want to think the rest of my plan through. We need a way to get out of the ship.
Lo?
Marisol whispers in a trembling voice.
What can we do?
Hearing her fear galvanizes me, oddly enough. Okay. She needs me to be strong and decisive, so I will be. Let's think this through, I tell her, trying to sound calmer than I really am. Did you move the coffin, Annie? Or are we still in the cargo bay?
Still in the cargo bay?
And you said the way off the ship was on fire? I think of the long ramp. I can feel her nod.
I didn't realize until everything was filled with smoke what was happening. By then it was too late. I thought about screaming, but...
She sighs.
I hid instead.
I pat her arm. It's okay. We're going to get out of this.
All right.
She tells me in a calmer voice, as if me saying it has made rescue a sure thing. So I just have to make it so. Are we in one of the coffins at the front or back of the bay? I wonder how far we are from the explosions, or if we're sitting in a fiery inferno even now.
Back, I guess?
I try to think of what was in the area. Crates, doorways, hatches, anything. Any tools in here?
I didn't grab anything but you,
Marisol says meekly.
No time.
It's okay. I'm just trying to figure everything out. Do you hear any more explosions? I twist and try to put my ear against the metal hull, but I can't quite reach, and with Marisol shoved against me, it's impossible.
I don't hear anything at all,
she confesses.
Maybe the ship sank and the fires went out.
I don't know if I find that reassuring. If it did, that means whatever oxygen is in this small coffin is all we have, and there are two of us sucking it in. Even now, every breath feels more and more claustrophobic, and like there's not enough air to go around. I think I'm going to have to open the coffin, I tell her.
Okay,
she says with a nod. It might kill us both. I warn her. There might be no air out there. It might be nothing but water. Or it might be nothing but smoke, and we're going to die if we can't get out. I'm just telling you because I know it's dangerous. But I do know we can't stay in here. Her eyes seem to get a little wider in the dark. Her hand clutches my arm tight.
If you think it's best.
I don't know if it's best, I admit. But it's what we've got to work with. I'm going to push the lid open and get out. You try and hunch down, so if there are flames... I pause, swallowing hard. If there are flames, or it's superheated in here, it'll hit me, and not you.
Thank you for being so brave,
she tells me in an admiring voice. I want to tell her that I'm not brave. That I'm just as terrified as she is, but one of us has to act. I just give her another pat on the arm. Be ready. I'm going to do this on the count of three. Before I lose my nerve. One. Two. I say aloud. And then take a long, deep breath just in case it's my last. Three. I push at the lid, even as Marisol scrunches down behind me. The lid doesn't budge easily. I brace my knee against it and push, and it finally moves. As it does, something sticky and black melts and leaves long strings behind, as if glue is melting from between the lid and the coffin itself. Some sort of seal, then. Melted. I push the lid aside and peer out. It's smoky in here, and the air feels stiflingly hot, but there's oxygen. It's not an inferno. Not yet. I can hear something burning in the distance, and the dry heat of the air makes my throat tickle. I cough sitting up. My head throbs with heat, and somewhere in the distance there's a low roar. Flames? I wonder even as I crawl over the side of the coffin. Stay put, I tell Marisol, like she's a 2-year-old instead of a woman my age. When my feet touch the ground, though, I realize what the roar is. It's water. Ankle high and coming in to flood the ship. The water's surprisingly warm, but I don't know if that's from the heat of the fires elsewhere, or if it's my cootie or what. At any rate, it's not welcome. I gaze around in frustration as the pouring, roaring sound grows louder. We won't have much time before the entire ship fills. I've got to figure out a way out. Smoke pours out of the entrance to the cargo bay, not through the rest of the ship, then. That's no good. I gaze around the room helplessly. The water's filling up even now, and as I watch, one of the coffins by the wall lifts up, bobbing slightly. Fuck. It won't take long now for this to completely flood, and then I'll drown. Think, Lo, think. I wade forward, scanning the large chamber. There's got to be a way out. Somehow, somewhere. This is a cargo bay. Okay, then. How do they get the cargo out? I scan the walls, and my gaze locks onto the hatch Mardok warned me about earlier. What did he say? Something about a latch being busted? No, wait. It was something about components and stripped parts, and if I touched it wrong, it'd bust the entire wall open. That's exactly what I need right now. I know what to do, I tell Marisol, sloshing through the water back to the side of her coffin. I point at the latch. That wall? Remember what Mardok said? You were in the room, weren't you? She nods and her eyes widen.
It'll come apart and knock us out of the ship. Do you think it'll work?
One way to find out, I tell her grimly. But I don't know if it'll work, or even if it does, if we'll be sucked away from each other.
I'll help,
she says, and starts to climb from the pod. No, I say and stop her before she gets out. There's no time to argue, but if this is dangerous, one of us needs to survive. You climb back in the pod and pull the lid on. Even if we're both sucked out into the ocean. I shudder at the thought of that dark green water with the strange tentacled creatures in it. Then you have a better chance of living if you're protected.
But
no buts, Marisol. Please. Let's just do this, okay? Every moment we waste arguing is another inch that the water rises. I gesture at my legs now wet up to the calf. If it gets much higher, the pressure might be too much for us to blow whatever hatch there is in here. She hesitates, pleading in her eyes.
I don't want you to die.
Me either. I grab the lid of the coffin and start to drag it over her pod again. So let's get this done and see if we both make it out. All right? I think for a moment that she's going to protest more, but she nods and slides back down into the coffin, helping me drag the lid back over her. When it's on, there's a little hiss of air, and then it seals itself again. Well, that's something, at least. The bubble of glass atop the pod is too covered with ash and soot for her to see out. That makes sense, as it was pitch black in there, and I hesitate for a moment, wondering if I should clean it off for her. No time. She can sightsee when she's safe. I slosh my way back to the wall, trying to recall exactly what Mardok told me. There's a coffin bobbing against it, floating in the water, and another one is sliding its way toward me. I push it aside, a little unnerved at how easy they are to move now. Damn water. I cough again, fanning a hand to try and clear the smoke. There's not enough air in here. Not enough air and too much water. What a mess. Whose bright idea was it to explode the spaceship? I mutter to myself as I feel along the wall, looking for a latch or a handle of some kind. There's a bar with alien writing on it, and it leads into a gap in the wall that looks like it's been worked on, or scrapped, recently. I place my hands on it. Please work. Please don't kill me. Please don't let a sea monster be out there waiting to eat me. Please don't let me drown. So many requests, but I won't know unless I push this hatch open. I suck in a deep breath because I know this is suicide. But I do it anyhow. The bar creaks. Metal groans. And then I'm jerked outside in a rush of air and water as the vacuum sucks me out into the ocean. I can't help it. I scream. Or I try to, but there's nothing but water and current. My mouth and lungs fill up with salt water and I choke, trying desperately to breathe, but there's nothing to breathe. There's also nothing to hold on to as I'm ripped through the water, carried along by the current. I reach out, but there's nothing to grab, nothing to hold on to. I'm going to die. I claw at the water, flipping back and forth in the endless deep. I don't know which way is up or down. I fight against the suction of the water and open my eyes, squinting out into the brine. It burns and stings, but I see something move past my head. An enormous air bubble. Oh, God. It's going the other way. I flip over in the water and there's sunlight far above. So far above. Frantic, I swim forward, my lungs and nose burning. It's hard to swim with all these leathers on me, and it's so damn cold. I keep swimming, though, because the sunlight looks so close, and yet so far. Black creeps in at the corners of my eyes, and I try to take another breath. Whoever said drowning was peaceful lied to me, because all I want to do is breathe, and I can't. Please, please, please. The light's so close, but I can't reach it, and it feels like the current is still fighting me. Why am I fighting so hard? Why don't I just give up? Let the water envelop me and sink into it. End all this struggle. The thought is a surprisingly easy one to latch onto. If only I could take a breath. I could think clearly. But I can't. There's no air. My limbs grow heavier, and it just becomes too much effort to reach the sunlight. It doesn't matter that it's so close now that I can practically touch it. Too little, too late. I'll save all that sunlight for someone else. I'll just close my eyes, and... Something grabs a handful of my hair and yanks me up. Pain lances through my scalp, and I flail weakly. My head breaks through the water, and then there's air on my face, bitterly cold compared to the strangely warm water. I cough and sputter, salt water pouring from my nose and my mouth. Marisol leans over her pod, her eyes wide. She's still got handfuls of my hair snagged in her fingers.
Are you alive?
Choking and coughing, I nod and try to suck in enough air to please my burning lungs. Everything hurts. Everything. It feels like Marisol pulled my hair out by the roots, but that's twice she saved me now. She releases my hair and shoves a hand in my face, and I weakly grab onto it.
Get in, she tells me. Hurry!
The air feels colder than the water does, but I remember the things that live in this ocean. I hold tightly to her as she does her best to haul me into the pod. It takes a lot of effort from both of us to drag me into the pod, and by the time I collapse onto the bottom, I'm exhausted and wheezing. My lungs still feel like they're heavy with salt water, and brine is in my eyes, my nose, and my pores.
Are you okay?
She asks, worried. I give her a weak thumbs up. She settles back down against me, not caring that I'm cold and wet, and takes off her jacket, offering it to me. She elbows me in the face as she does, but that's okay. My teeth chatter and I strip off my sodden fur parka and use hers as a blanket.
You're okay? I'm okay,
she agrees and pulls the lid back down over us. It gets dark immediately, but it also gets warmer. I'm fine with that.
My pod immediately went to the surface. One of the others did too. But I think the rest didn't have lids on, so they filled up. There's no sign of the ship, either. I waited and waited, but I think when we were jettisoned, it pushed us far out to sea.
She hesitates for a moment and then adds,
I can't see the shore.
It's okay. Thank you for saving me. I cough out, and I mean it. I've been babying Marisol because she's been frightened, but she's shown a staggering amount of bravery in the last while, and I'm going to be forever grateful to her.
I didn't think beyond this, I admit to her. I don't have a plan for getting us to shore.
A cuss word bubbles up inside me, but I end up just coughing out more seawater. She pats my shoulder absently.
Don't worry. If we're near a shore of any kind, the waves will carry us toward it, I think.
I nod weakly, and then I'm too tired, or too waterlogged, to stay awake. I close my eyes to relieve my aching, splitting head. I just need to rest for a moment, I think. Then we'll come up with a plan to get back to shore. Just a moment.
5. Cathar. One cannot live on an island without seeing strange things wash up on shore. Sometimes it is the carcass of a strange water creature, with fins instead of legs, and strange glowing blobs instead of eyes. Sometimes it's an enormous bone from a long-dead animal, or the naked branches of a fallen tree. Shells, fish, smooth stones, small stones, large stones. But never before have I seen a stone as large as the black one that bobs against the surf in the distance. It looks to be larger than a full-grown male, larger even than the fat, scaly body of a kari. And it floats. That in itself makes it unusual. I have to know what it is. I scan the cliff I stand atop, looking for vines leading downward to let me climb my way to the shore. I must be quick. Even though the 4 clans, now 3, live apart, we have an agreement. If something washes up on the shore, it belongs to those that find it. And whatever this exotic floating stone is, it is going to be mine. Excited, I find a strong vine and begin to climb my way down the cliffs. There is no spot on this island I do not know like the backs of my hands, and it does not take me long to descend. A skyclaw soars overhead as I do, looking for easy prey, and I shift skin tones with a thought, automatically blending to match the rock I press up against. The skyclaw flies right past without stopping, and if I did not have another mission, I might try leaping onto its back as it flies past. Skyclaw are good eating, after all, and there's plenty of meat for the entire tribe. But there will always be more Skyclaw, and I have never seen anything like this floating rock before. So I continue climbing down. I drop onto the beach quickly, pleased with the speed with which I've managed to cross the craggy cliffs. Were I not in a hurry, I might skip the vines and follow the winding trails down the cliffs. Check my traps, forage greens, enjoy the day. But the uniqueness of this find calls to me, makes me hurry. I move toward it on the beach, letting my color fade back to normal. As I do, my steps slow and a growl forms in my throat, because I see another approaching from the opposite direction. Not just any sach, but my most hated of rivals. are Jarl of the clan of the Tallhorn. Of course it would be he. I growl low in my throat and march toward him, pulling out my four blades and brandishing them in his direction, letting the threat speak for itself. He gives me a sneer of welcome as he approaches, spear casually held in one of his hands.
I should have known you'd be here. Trash always washes ashore.
Big words for a male with only two puny hands, I tell him. A gesture at the large rock, bobbing on the shore. That is mine. I saw it first.
No, brother,
he says, using the term derisively.
That belongs to me. Even now I stand closer to it than you do.
And he leans over and taps the surface of the rock with his spear.
My sea gift, not yours.
I eye him with loathing. He is tall and lean, where I am strong and muscular. His natural color is slightly lighter than my own. Camouflage, rippling up and down his arms and changing colors with emotion. He might only have two arms to my four, but he is as strong as any. I know. I have fought him in the past. But I have twice as many opportunities to grab him, if I can get close. The only thing that might cause me trouble are the massive sweep of horns arching from his brow that give his clan their name. Still, I am not the chief of the clan of the Strong Arm, because I am a coward. I flex aggressively, letting my color show my anger. I will not back down. This is mine to take. I do not tell him that the food is scarce in our territory lately, or that a Chai has passed on, leaving us to care for her small son. That we struggle with bringing in food, since the same hunt that killed a Chai took Nadek's leg. Jashel must remain behind and care for both kit and kin, which leaves all the hunting to me. But our Jarl will not care about any of this, just as I do not care about his tribe's troubles. His clan is dying, just like mine. All of us are dying out. We only prolong it with every day of survival. There is no hope for our people. Not since the great smoking mountain exploded 7 turns ago and destroyed most of the island, and most of the people living on it. No, our Jarl will not care if the clan of the Strong Arm is starving. Nor do I care if the Tall Horn are thriving on their side of the island. All I care about is this thing on the shore, and that it is mine.
So quick to battle me, Cathar.
Our Jarl's glance is mocking.
When you don't even know what it is.
And you do, I tell him, scoffing. I am still wary, but I do not sense an urge to fight from him. Only his usual dismissive attitude. Cautious, I holster two of my knives, willing to stand down, but only a little.
I think it is an egg,
he tells me, sliding his spear into its holster at his back to free his hands. He rubs them together, then gestures at the large black stone in the surf.
Look at how it bobs in the current. It is a monstrous egg of some kind.
He glances over at me through narrowed eyes, his skin color fading slightly to a more neutral shade.
We can crack it and split the contents. There should be enough food for both of our clans.
I eye him. Why is he so eager to share? Clans do not share. We are rivals, he and I, and to give him half without a fight seems strange to me. Unless our Jarl realizes that this sea gift is mine, and he is trying to game a share for himself, or his people are hungry as well. I study him, thinking. I know I am hot-headed. I know it is my nature to fight. Everything in me is telling me to snarl and challenge him and claim this for my people. My people, not his. If he's right, and it is an egg. This yolk will feed little Zeren for many days. I should not split it. It is mine to claim. But if I fight Arjal and he wins, then I return empty-handed. If it were anyone else, I would be completely assured of my success. I am the strongest of hunters on the island. But Arjal is the quickest. He and I have sparred at clan gatherings and come out even more times than not. If it were anyone else. I can chance it, or I can think of my clan's well-being. I growl low in my throat because I know what I want, and yet I must think of my clan first. I do not like sharing.
Nor I, but I also do not feel like fighting this day.
He puts his hands on his hips, tail flicking, looking very much as if he'd wish to fight after all. I scowl at him. Lies. He loves a good spar as much as I do, and I am his favorite fight partner. Something else must be troubling him, or he is sick, or starving, or he knows something I do not. I study him for a moment longer, full of mistrust. Every moment we waste is another moment someone else could come along, though. I know it would not be one of my tribe. Nadech is cave-bound, and Jashel will have the kit. It is only me out and about on this day. If another of the Tallhorn clan arrives, I will be outnumbered. Or if one of the Shadowed Cat clan arrives, we will have to split the sea's bounty three ways. With a frustrated snarl, I flip one of my blades and offer it to him, handle first. Let us carve out our shares, then. He grunts and sounds surprised that I have agreed. Arjal takes the knife with a nod to me and then strides forward, tail flicking. I follow behind, my other knife still in hand as we approach the strange thing. It looks dark, the shell of it smooth and unblemished, unlike any creature I have ever seen before. There is a small circular bubble of some kind at the far end, an eye, perhaps. But the rest of the thing is unrelenting black. I touch the surface as Arjal peers at it, and it feels like no eggshell or hide I have ever felt before. He taps the end of his blade, my blade, against the surface and listens.
Sounds hollow.
A hollow egg with a hard shell might mean the creature inside is ready to hatch. Too dark to be a Skyclaw egg, I point out. Too large, too. Shame. Skyclaw are good eating and can feed a clan for days on one egg. Be ready for any creature that will emerge. He nods, his mouth firming into a hard, irritated line. I know how he feels. I do not like working with him either. But I think of the hungry mouths back at the tribe, and the squalling kit who needs his mother's milk, and will never get it. I must think of them first. I tap my own hilt on the surface and place my hand on it, checking for movement. There is a hairline crack along one side. Good enough place to stick a blade, I suppose. I push the edge of my knife in the crack and pry. To my surprise, the shell hisses and lifts up. I jump backward, camouflaging even as I pull my knives from my belt once more, ready to attack. Out of the corner of my eye, I notice Arjal camouflages as well. His skin changing to match the greenish-brown of the sand even as he pulls out his spear, readying to attack. I crouch low, twirling my knives, prepared to strike. The piece of shell continues to rise and then moves gently to the side. The hissing stops. There's a noise like a yawn, and then something rises from within. It's a female, I think. Her camouflage is a strange golden color that matches none of her surroundings, and she smacks her lips and rubs her head, shaking out her mane. Her sleepy gaze lands on the beach, and then on Arjal, then me. She pales, and her eyes roll back in their sockets. Her body slumps, and she disappears back inside the stone egg.
What?
Arjal looks at me, shocked. I straighten, putting away my knives. I let my camouflage fade to my natural blue and stride forward.
Was that a female?
He puts a hand to his chest, over his heart, His jaw clenches and he glances over at me.
Mine. She is mine.
Do you resonate to her, then? I wonder why I do not feel possessive for the female. If it truly is one, she is the only female left on this island after the great smoking mountain destroyed our clans, and with the death of a Chai. I should claim her for my clan, but I do not feel anything for her. Surely if she were meant to be mine, I would feel something, would I not?
No, he says swiftly. All the same, she is mine.
Arjal moves forward, leaning over the edge of the egg to gaze inside at the fallen female. Then he looks at me and laughs.
There are two!
Two. My heart thuds heavily in my chest. Two females. Why? Why do they come to us in an egg? Is it a sign from the ancestors who came to this world in an egg? I move forward and lean in, scarcely daring to believe Arjal. There, nestled inside the egg, lie two females. Both of them are colored all wrong for camouflage. I hold my breath, because they are unmistakably female. They are smaller than Sakh females, and far more delicate. And their teats are bloated, but I cannot deny that they are female. Neither one has horns. They cannot be of the Tall Horn clan, then. I clench two of my fists, counting arms. Only four for both females. Two for each. Not clan strong arm, then, either. Arjal reaches out and touches one female's arm. The dark-maned one that collapsed. Her forearm is smooth and unfurred. Not clan shadowed cat, then, either. I do not care about that female, though. It is the other one that holds my attention. She is paler than the other, her skin more a strange whitish pink than the warm gold of the other. Even their camouflage does not match properly. Her mane hangs about her delicate face, and the color of it is pale as well, a rosy reddish brown instead of the dark black it should be. Her lashes are long and shadow her cheeks. And she has the most charming little nub of a nose and a soft pink mouth. This one is mine. I feel it surge through me, the intense knowing and covetous feeling of finding something that truly belongs to me. It does not matter how this female got here. She is leaving with me. I reach in and gather her in my arms, careful not to harm her. Her head lolls, and I put a hand under it to support her, then carefully lift her out, cradling her body against my chest. For a scant moment, I worry she is not breathing, and I hold my own breath until I see her teats rise and fall. Alive. Thank the ancestors.
Wait,
Arjal says as he lifts the other female out.
They should both go with me. You know the clan rules. Forearms goes to clan strongarm. Both of these females have two.
I bare my teeth at him. He dares to quote the ancestors' rules at me. You have that female. This one is mine. I stroke her hair off her brow, already fascinated by her. It does not matter to me that she is weak and only has two arms. I will protect her and care for her, as if she is as whole as any other female.
There are others in my clan that need mates.
Rage seethes inside me. He thinks to take what is mine. I see no horns on your female friend, I sneer back at him. Neither should go with you either. He narrows his eyes at me and cradles his female to his chest.
You cannot have her.
I do not want her. But I will kill him if he tries to take this one from me. You have yours, I have mine. I do not care about clan rules. Clan rules would say that no distinguishing features would go to the outcast clan, but they are long gone. Just the thought of having to give up my female makes me mad with rage. And I hold her tighter. Mine. 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 The word throbs through my mind, as fierce as any heartbeat. I can feel it, pumping through me like blood. Mine. 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 This female is mine. That is why I do not care about the other. My heart knew this one was coming to me. I am not entirely surprised when my cooey begins to sing.